Call the Senate Education Committee to order. Thank you for being here. Today is Tuesday, January 28, 2020. The time is 9 a.m. In attendance are Senator Coghill. Welcome back, Senator Coghill. Senator Hughes, Vice Chair. Senator Costello is not here, but will be shortly, I believe. Senator Begich is here, and myself, Stevens. We have a quorum to conduct business. Today we'll be continuing our hearing on sponsor substitute for Senate Bill 6, sponsored by Senator Begich, relating to early learning and literacy, and being referred to as the Alaska Reads Act. The intention today is to focus our attention primarily on the fiscal notes and funding for the bill, and hold the bill for further review. Any questions or comments from the community before we get started? Thank you for being here. Senate Bill 6, five current fiscal notes on file for this bill. You have those in your packet and provided by the administration on January 23rd of 2020. They're numbered SSSB 6, number 1 through number 5, and begin with opening comments, Senator Begich.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just on last Thursday, we had an opportunity to go through a pretty lengthy review of the details of the bill. Just to reiterate, there are three major components, one of which addresses the early learning component, one of which addresses the science and evidence-based reading component, one that talks about that intensive intervention with the lower performing schools. We talked just in general terms about the fiscal impact of the bill. We'll hear that in more detail now. But I want to reiterate a couple of points that we've learned in our research in my office, that I've learned from the testimony before the committee and through the work of Senator Hughes and the work of Representative Ledoux and others. And that is that if you're going to have a successful reading program, kids need to be prepared when they come to school to read. If you're going to have a successful pre-K program, you need to have a strong reading program to reinforce the gains that are made in evidence-based pre-kindergarten. What this bill does is accomplish both of those tasks. Working with the governor, the commissioner, and with others, we have developed that concept. We've put aside political differences to see if we can't make this work for all kids in Alaska, because that's what we're primarily here for, to make sure that kids have an opportunity to succeed. Knowing that, and knowing that today we're gonna get the news of the cost of success, I don't think you can actually put a price tag on it. And that's what I'm hoping we come out of today with. There are pragmatic ways of addressing the cost of this legislation, but in the end, if it improves the ability for us to reduce the number of kids that are in special ed, if we increase the opportunity of kids to move on to better opportunities in their own life, better jobs, raising their families in a better environment, staying out of the criminal justice system, if we just provide those starting points for kids, Mr. Chairman, the change will be transformative for our state. And there is no way we can truly measure the economic impact of that. With that said, it's really more important for us to hear from the experts and for those who have put together the fiscal notes that are before us. I think you'll find extraordinary detail in the fiscal notes as to what the resources are going to be used for and how. And I think it will help flesh out the bill and answer some of the questions some of you may have had. I'm very enthusiastically looking forward to the presentation of the commissioner and Aaron and Heidi, and look forward to hearing their comments. Thank you for the opportunity to say a few words.
Thank you, Senator Begich. Appreciate your comments. So we're going to go into the five fiscal notes. I'd ask you to hold questions until we get through all five, then we'll come back. It's going to be complex, so let's hold questions until we get through them. And Commissioner, ask you to come forward if you would, please. Thank you very much for being here, Commissioner Michael Johnson, Department of Education, and also with Ms. Heidi Tescher, the Director of Finance and Support Services. Thank you both for being here. Commissioner.
For the record, my name is Michael Johnson, the Commissioner of the Department of Education and Early Development. Thank you, Chair Stevens. I'll make just a couple very brief introductory remarks, but if I may, before I do, I'd just like to point out in honor that there's a Commissioner of Education in the room that has much more experience testifying before committees than I do. So if we get in a pinch, we can call on that Commissioner of Education. So just put him on the list. But Commissioner Michael Hanley is in the room, and just appreciate him being here. So Senator Begich made some of the comments that I wanted to make, which was there are three parts to this bill, and so as we go through the fiscal notes and Heidi explains those, it addresses each of those elements of the bill. And it's a great bill because it's a great opportunity for kids in Alaska. And part of what makes it a great bill is that we worked to bring together many of the discussions that had happened in this committee and other committees and the bills that had been introduced by various people and brought them together in one bill to address reading comprehensively. So if all we did was a pre-K bill, but we didn't have the structures in school to support that as kids continue, it wouldn't have been as strong. Or if only we had an intervention bill and we didn't have something that addressed our issues of students that come to school without the basic skills needed to learn to read, it wouldn't have been as strong a bill. And then the school improvement piece, I think, is also a critical part of the bill because we know we have some schools that have struggled for decades, and this gives us an opportunity to go and try to build capacity in those bills. The expense for this bill, I think, is a worthy investment because if we implement this, which we will work very hard to implement this bill effectively, it will make all the other money that we spend on public education that much more effective and meaningful in the lives of kids. So with that, I'll turn it over to Heidi.
Thank you, Commissioner. Heidi.
Good morning, for the record. Heidi Teschner, Director of Finance and Support Services with the Department of Education and Early Development. As Chair Stevens said, there are five fiscal notes tied to this sponsor's substitute for Senate Bill 6. I am going to go slightly out of order than the 1 through 5 in your packet, but I will tell you which ones I am addressing as I start. So I'm going to start with what you have number five. So for the early learning coordinator, or the foundation program, which is OMB component number 141. So this one followed by the number 3 fiscal note, which is for the fund capitalization, which is OMB component number 2804. These two notes are what affect the addition of the 4-year-olds to the foundation formula. So the first note for the foundation program, you're going to notice that there's no money tied to this, as this is a funding mechanism for this program, is a general fund transfer to the public education fund to pay for so it goes into the public education fund, not the foundation program, which is why this note is a 0 fiscal note. So if you go to fiscal note number 3, this is where you start seeing the money needed to make the foundation program whole. This fiscal note takes the total amount of projected state aid and divides it by the total number of ADM, so the average daily membership, to come up with an average cost per ADM. And since this bill funds a student at 1/2 of that average, $4,685 is the estimated per student cost. And then this average cost, and so this is an average cost. So as the kids actually flow through the formula, assuming that as the kids flow through the formula, districts may receive more depending on where their school is located. So this is just for analysis of fiscal impact. And there are 6 cohorts of students that will run through the early education grant program. And so that first cohort would transition into the foundation formula in fiscal year 2024 after they finished the initial 3-year grant, assuming that all of our assumptions here is that all of the programs that are starting that go through each cohort will transition and the programs are approved and transition into the foundation formula. And so starting in fiscal year 2024, the foundation program would increase by $1,724,100, and then this would increase to $4,305,500 in fiscal year 2025, and then $6,887,000 in fiscal year 2026. By the time all of the cohorts have run through each of the 3-year grants, which will continue until fiscal year 2029, the total amount that's estimated to increase the foundation formula is $17,217,400. So I'm going to move on to what is your fiscal note number 1, which is the early learning coordination, OMB component number 2912. This fiscal note shows the cost associated with operating the early education grant program, as well as providing the training and support to the grantees. It's estimated that it would require 3 staff members to operate this program and provide that training and support. There's 2 education specialist positions and 1 education associate position reflected in the fiscal note. So in addition to their salary and benefit costs, there are department chargeback costs of $9,600 per person and a one-time cost of $5,000 per person for supplies and equipment, as well as a one-time cost of $6,000 to implement for the legal fees required to implement the regulations tied with this early education program. So the total estimated for fiscal year 21 is $401,900. I'm now going to move on to what is your fiscal note number 2. This is the pre-kindergarten grants, OMB component number 3028. And this is the cost associated with just the early education program grants. So page 3 of your fiscal note hopefully is a pretty colored chart to help you see.
I think we have the color, we just have the shading.
Okay. So this provides the funding breakdown by fiscal year for the 3-year grant program. Starting with the table 1, the cohort of students every year is about 10,000 per grade. So we looked at the number of students participating in preschool programs in Alaska and tried to determine the additional amount of students that could be served by this program. So striving for an 88% participation rate, additional 3,675 students would be served through this Senate Bill 6. And that's how we move into table number 2, which breaks down how many students would flow through each grant year. So the lowest 10% of districts performing, estimated 368 students would be served in the first cohort, 551 in the years 2 and 3 each, and then 735 in years 4 through 6 each, for a total of 3,675 students. So table 3 breaks down each year of the cohort and the fiscal year. So shows which cohorts would flow through the grants and the number of students served through each of those to reflect the fiscal note costs that you're showing towards the bottom of the page.
Heidi, would you slow down just a little bit?
Yes. Sorry. So as for your shading, you can see that, you know, every 3 years worth. So year one would just be cohort number 1. Year 2 would be cohort number 2 and 3. And year 3 would be cohorts 1, 2, and 3. At that point, cohort 1 would transition to the foundation formula. And then we would start cohort number 4 in fiscal year 4, which would then be cohorts 2, 3, and 4 moving through. So total cost estimated for the 3-year education grant in year 1 is estimated at $1,728,100. Year 2, $4,305,500. By the end of all 6 cohorts moving through the 3-year grant program, it's estimated that the total grant would have cost $51,652,000, approximately $100. And that's shown at the very bottom of your page. Page 3 of 3. And then the table 4 just reflects how we came, the numbers associated with coming up with the foundation formula totals. And so those are also reflected in the fiscal analysis of those 2 fiscal notes. So they all tie together. And I'd estimated that over the costs, as I stated earlier, the cost of the foundation program by the time all cohorts have run through and have moved to the foundation formula, it would be a $17,217,400 increase to the foundation formula. And then the last fiscal note in front of you will be your fiscal note number 4, which is the student school achievement OMB component number 2796. And in here, we're showing you the costs, what's reflected, the costs associated with the school improvement literacy program and the comprehensive reading intervention program. So the first program reflected in the analysis section is the school improvement literacy program. And through this program, DEED will provide direct support and intervention to in-district and school literacy programs. So during year one, up to 10 low-performing districts would each be served directly by a reading specialist employed by DEED, and up to 20 schools would be served in the second year and beyond. So depending on the size of the school and the need, either one or two reading specialists would be assigned to each school. We anticipate employing 10 to 20 specialists in year one and 20 to 40 in the subsequent years. So for purposes of determining fiscal analysis, we've maximized the number of positions in year one with five additional positions phased in annually over the following 4 years. So if we can't hire all 20 staff in year one, we will adjust the out years based on how the program is being implemented. So the timing of passing this bill is critical in helping us implement getting staff hired as soon as possible in fiscal year 21 so we can implement this program quickly and efficiently. So in addition to the salary and benefit costs reflected in the fiscal note, there is department chargebacks of $9,600 per person and one-time costs of $5,000 per person for supplies and equipment, and as well as an additional $6,000 for legal services associated with regulation changes. And the final cost associated with the school improvement literacy program is the purchase of supplemental reading textbooks and materials for school districts in connection with reading intervention services. So the cost per student when adopting a new reading curriculum is about $25,000. So with approximately 10,000 students per grade, there are a total of 40,000 students in kindergarten through third grade. So during fiscal year 20 school year that we're in right now, 391 schools served K-3 students. So for fiscal analysis, we took the 40,000 students divided by the 391 schools to come up with 102 K-3 students per school on average. So the cost associated with the supplemental reading textbooks would be about $255,000 for that piece. And then the comprehensive reading intervention program is the next item reflected in this fiscal note. And this through this, we will manage and operate the program and provide direct support and training for all K-3 teachers on the use of statewide screening or assessment tools. And the staff needed to accomplish this to estimate that there's one education administrator, two education specialists, and one education associate. So the staff will be required to participate in and present at statewide professional development conferences, as well as provide direct support to district staff concerning the statewide screening or assessment tool. So for that support, we estimate about $3,000 is needed for travel. In addition to the salary and benefits, there are department chargebacks of $9,600 per person and initial one-time costs of $5,000 per person for supplies and equipment. In addition, there's the comprehensive reading intervention program requires the adoption and administration of a statewide screening or assessment tool to identify the students in K-3 with reading deficiencies. So again, with the 40,000 students in K-3 in Alaska, the annual estimated cost for that tool is $320,000. And then finally, a final cost associated with this program are grants for one staff member per district to attend a statewide screening or assessment tool training. So for 53 school districts and one staff member per district at $1,000, we estimate about $53,000 in the grant line for those grants. So the overall estimated cost is $4,221,700 in fiscal year 21 to begin the implementation. those two programs. So I know I covered a lot of material, and you have questions, so we're here to answer those.
Thank you very much. I know that's a lot of material. You're absolutely right. But I appreciate you going through it in detail. I'm sure there are a lot of questions. But can you give us a bottom line of the cost of the entire program?
I can, and I had it just a second ago. Thank you, Aaron. So in year one, it is $6,347,700. And by fiscal year 2026, it's $24,606,000.
In 2026?
In 2026.
Great. Thank you. Senator Begich.
A number of questions just to clarify on the fiscal note and make sure I got it right, because, of course, I've seen these fiscal notes before, but I want to be sure that everybody understands because they're quite complex. It took us 3 years to develop the fiscal note with the colorful diagrams. So the entire grants program and that entire amount is over a full 9 years. You gave a bottom line amount of just over $50 million, but that's also spread out over 9 years. Is that correct?
That's correct.
All right, so that's 9 years, not 1 year. Pete, so I want to make that clear to folks. Second, that the grants program is more expensive than what happens in the end, which is the kids get rolled into the at a half an ADM count. They get rolled into the ADM count eventually, and that count and the impact on the foundation program is actually less than the cost of the kids in the grants program at the time because you're developing those grants programs. That seems to be what's reflected here. Is that correct?
Through the chair, yes.
So that leads me to the third point, which is some districts will already qualify to roll their kids into the ADM, so that will actually potentially bring down the overall impact of this fiscal note, wouldn't it?
If that's, yes, through the chair, that would, yes.
Right, so this is an out. This is like given absolutely nobody in the system and having to bring people up to speed, this is the fundamental cost of this on the outside. So this is what I would call a high-end fiscal note to some degree, right?
Through the chair, yes. You have to estimate the maximum possible, just not knowing.
Very supportive of that, Heidi. So if I could, for just a couple more clarifying points here. In the presentation of the fiscal note in the pre-K program, one of the things that we don't have the ability to really measure is if you actually keep kids out of special ed, that actually will fundamentally lower potentially long-term costs for kids going into special ed, remedial education, other things that might be happening later. Based on the data and the research we have done both nationally and I think at the state level, wouldn't that also be correct? So we'd be potentially bringing down some of the costs in the long run of even the foundation program.
Absolutely. Through the chair, if we catch them early, they're not going to be classified as an intensive student, and that would definitely bring the cost of the foundation program down.
And then finally,
flesh that out a little bit before.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
So I've heard that, and I just want to have a confirmation of it that many of the students that we now have in special ed are there only because of lack of reading abilities. Is that true?
Chair Stevens, that's probably true in some cases that a student has had difficulty learning to read. So we know from national studies that sometimes there is students are placed in special education not necessarily for a disability but because of a reading issue. That's not true in every case, though. Some students a lot of students are there legitimately. The other thing I would note about this whole topic, though, is that if we get students reading proficiently by the end of third grade, they're much more likely to take dual credit courses and even graduate early, further saving the system money.
Yes, please, Senator Hughes.
It's related to
yes,
that because
we'll
I'm not sure you were
just a
you were finished.
To make sure we fully understand, but go ahead.
It would be very helpful because I understand that there have been substantial special education savings in some of these other states. Could we get data to see that? Because I know you're going to err on the side of caution as far as how you factor these, but I think it would be helpful. And I'll volley back to Senator Begich, but one of the things I'd like to understand is that you asked for the grand total, and that was $24 million. I believe that was just relating maybe to the reading part. I'd kind of like to know, like, the big grand total for 1 year as well as over the number of years, and then break it into two buckets, one for pre-K and one for what I would call the read-by-nine or read-by-the-end-of-third-grade proficiency program, and just to understand those, the big grand total per year, and then for the whole span, and then those two buckets. You know, I could do a lot of math here with these if I took the time, but I figure that's your job, and maybe you could just give that to me.
Thank you, Senator. Let's
just clarify through the chair, Senator Hughes. So the totals I did give you were all for all of the fiscal notes added together. So in year one, it's a $6.3 million increase. By year 2026, it's a $24 million increase. All of through fiscal year 21 through 26, it's the total for those years alone is $91.5 million. So for all of this added together.
Would you say that again, 91.5,
yes.
And what does that represent?
That's just fiscal years 21 through 26.
Okay, and Senator Baggett, you had mentioned a $50 million figure. That was a nine-year?
That's the pre-K figure.
Pre-K, okay. Great.
Yeah, so if I could clarify, Mr. Chairman.
I'm sorry, we got away from you. We'll
yeah,
back
so the clarification based on the question you asked, because I've had some analysis done of that, Senator Hughes, through the chair. The student achievement in the first year would be just over $4 million. The reading component would be over $4 million. The pre-K component would be about $1.7 million. So $4 million for the reading piece in the first year, $1.7 for the pre-K component. The pre-K component maxes out the year that all the largest number of districts are there, and that's in FY26. But by FY29, it's zero. The pre-K component in terms of the grants program is gone. So that you're not looking at year one being $6 million, year FY26 being $24 million, and then that $24 million continuing to grow. In fact, what happens is the grants program has run its course. It has a termination date in the bill. It's done because every district has been exposed to the pre-K component. Meanwhile, you still have the student school achievement component, the Reads Act pieces that you were talking about momentarily ago. And those are averaging around $7 million a year at that point. That's the additional, what we've determined will be the additional amount of money that will be necessary to ensure that we're keeping our comprehensive reading program going. Does that make sense?
May I?
Senator Hughes, please.
One of the things, yes, I'm trying to follow you.
Yes.
And perhaps it's because I'm not fully understand the pre-K policy, but when the grant runs out, now we're increasing the ADM by $17 million. So once a school uses their grant funds, are all those children then shifted to the ADM at
half
rate?
An ADM. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
So if I may, Mr. Chairman. So Senator Hughes, what's happening there at the end is you've rolled them into the ADM. They're part of your foundation formula. And that's actually less expensive for them to be in the foundation formula than the grants program. Why? Well, because these are districts that don't have a pre-kindergarten program, so we want to make sure that their pre-kindergarten program they develop, and this is very consistent with what the governor wanted, is just not scattershot, that it's actually one that has the highest levels of quality associated with it, and similar to the ones that the department currently supports and funds. So one of the things the governor identified to me in our conversations was, you know, I support early learning, I support pre-K. What I don't want is a bunch of different pre-K programs that have different standards and different values, or that somebody calls pre-K but isn't pre-K. And so my response to him was, then let's be consistent, put that authority with the commissioner to have approval over what is or isn't a pre-K program. Then those get rolled into your ADM. So that's the whole approach, is to make sure that we're doing what we said we'd do, and we're actually providing the integrity that we need, so that when people then roll into, when those kids at K roll into the reading program, they're actually able to take full advantage of it and lock in the gains that have made at pre-K. So that's sort of the approach. But I did have a couple more clarifying points.
Please,
does that
ahead.
Make sense?
Yes.
So the other question I had for you is, you know, we've been hearing over and over again this year and last year about the declining population in the state of Alaska and the aging of the state of Alaska. So that declining population means it's not a per capita decline in population. It's a real decline in population here. So that coupled with the aging population, is that reflected, the projected decline in young people population? So right now we're predicting 10,000 or so kids. Is that projected in your fiscal note as well, the decline in population, and how, in fact, the numbers might be smaller because it'd be fewer kids in the state?
Through the chair, it's not reflected in there.
Okay. So the reason I bring all those issues up is I wanted to really identify for you as members of this committee, this is a big lift we're talking about here, just as many of our most complex issues are big lifts. It's spread out over 9 years. We have a substantial investment in kids that we're talking about here. It's a shift in a program, but there are mitigating factors that aren't reflected in the fiscal notes that we need to be aware of and put on the record. Number one, that our population is getting older, and it has in fact shrunk over the last few years. Number two, that over time, some of the districts will already be in the ADM because they have programs that meet the criteria, so that will actually lower the amount of grant outlay in that program. Number three, that the number of kids that would be involved in remedial education and would be reduced, and that will reduce significantly some of the impact on the foundation formula. Those aren't reflected in the fiscal notes, but I won't kid you, these are pretty big fiscal notes, but they're spread out over a great period of time so that we can get the full impact of what we're trying to do here. And so with that, I turn it back to the chair. But those are the questions I had, just to be clear on those subjects.
Thank you, Senator Baker. Senator Hughes?
I'm trying not to be blown away by the really high fiscal note. And so it would be really helpful is, again, data from other states of how remedial work at the higher grades, how special ed was reduced, and then actually generate population trends as far as we've heard recently our population in the state has declined, and as Senator Begich mentioned, we're aging, but also there is data out there as far as that people are having fewer children than they were, 15, 20 years ago. All that would be really helpful, and I know you maybe have to stick to what you have printed on these sheets, but if you could provide that data to tell us potentially how much lower it could be, that would be really helpful. And one of the things I struggle with, Mr. Chair, is as far as the read by nine, I know we're adding some reading specialists and things like that to help the districts, and I could see us doing that, but really what we're asking is the schools to do something they really should have been doing all along, is making sure that children know how to read by third grade, the end of third grade. And we all cringe when we have unfunded mandates, but really we do have schools that are successfully teaching children to be proficient by third grade, and now all of a sudden we're going to be forking out, some very big dollars for what the schools really should be doing already. So I do have grave concerns about how high it is. And so it would be helpful, again, to have data about potentially how it could be lowered and that you're erring on the high side. I think that's going to be really important for the public, especially when we are looking at a $1.5 billion fiscal gap, and our options are looking at really to people's wallets at this point. So I think we're really going to have to nail this down and make it clear that it could be potentially lowered. And I guess the pre-K grants are going to, as you said, phase out, and then that ADM is actually going to be a lower amount. For the reading piece, is this going to be an ongoing piece, or are we trying to bring the schools up so that they will just incorporate these interventions and such into what they do, or is this going to be an added cost, for the next 20, 30, 40 years, just for this, for these statutes, if this becomes law?
Through the chair, Senator Hughes. So, in our current context, any money we spend is expensive because of our fiscal situation. But if you think about it, over the next 10 years, if you take basically what we're spending on education right now, we'll spend $15 billion on education. When you take this and divide it out over that 10 years, that's a really small percentage of the $15 billion. To your specific question about will the money we spend in these first few years be an expense that goes for the next 10 years, I don't know the answer for sure, but I would say in some regard I would say yes, because you're going to have the governor mentioned last night his concern about the turnover rate. So until we address that, we're going to have to be continually training people until we get a handle on that. The other thing is it's going to take a while to work. This is a program. All these programs phase in over years, so we're going to be gradually building up our capacity and our expertise out in the field to address these issues. Then, you know, each year new students come with needs that we need to address through these programs. So I can't tell you for sure that it will be or it won't be. I think this is a good bill, and it will that we'll see savings and efficiencies in our system that we don't now because we get more kids reading. So there may be expenses that do go away. But then we also have needs in our system, even beyond reading, that we're going to have to continue to address, like the frequent turnover and training of teachers. So I hope that was helpful.
The impact on on the department is pretty enormous, it seems to me. You're taking on a lot of responsibility here, and you've only have three people added in the department, if I understand that right. I'm just wondering if that's a reasonable. Is that going to handle it for the department? We keep cutting the department back. We have done that in the last several years. Is it three people that we're talking about first?
Chair Stevens, no. So three people would just be in the early learning coordination for the early learning grants.
In the department.
In the department.
Yeah.
There's an additional, 10 to 40 reading specialists that would be employed by the department that would go out to districts, be in the schools working with the students.
So you consider those department employees then, those mm-hmm. 10 to 40?
And then there's an additional four staff to help. So that one was with the reading program, and then the intervention program, there's four staff noted under that, but it's intended that the education administrator would actually oversee and be the support lead person over all three of these programs that are reflected within this the sponsor substitute for Senate Bill 6.
So Heidi, if I understand that we're talking about seven staff members in the department plus 10 to 40 working with the districts, was that
correct?
Is that okay? Good. Thank you very much. On that issue, I also have a question from Senator Coghill. So, Senator Coghill, and then we'll come back to Senator.
Mine goes to a different level of question. First of all, I kind of like what we're doing here. We're targeting a need, but for the context, help me with the context. How many schools total in Alaska?
Through the chair, Senator Coghill, 505 this year.
505, mm-hmm. And what we're going to be doing is targeting underperforming schools?
Through the chair, Senator Coghill, that's the way the program starts, is by targeting those schools.
And we have 20 schools. How many are underperforming generally at this point? Where does that line fall of the 500?
Through the chair, Senator Coghill, we will get you that number. We have an accountability system through the Every Student Succeeds Act where we have some targeted schools for targeted improvement, and then we have comprehensive schools, and there's various criteria that they meet to fall in those categories, and I don't have the number in my head about how many that is.
Eventually that'll help me when it comes to whether I'll agree with this policy call, mainly because I want to know if we're taking 1% of it trying to move it, or we're trying to take 40% of it and move it. And so, to me, that'll make a difference on how this investment goes, and I do tend to think about this retention issue, because let's just say some of those schools are outside of the urban areas, retention even is more difficult. And here we're talking about hiring ed specialists, where we're having a hard time just getting people who can be outside of specialty, just a regular teacher. If there's such a thing as a regular teacher, I don't think there is such a thing. They're all highly trained, but we're focusing on reading here. Of the specialists, is our market able to get us these? Are we going to go out to the market and say, give me these many specialists? Are they out there?
Through the chair, Senator Coghill, there's a shortage across the nation in terms of educators, and so we'll have to have a really aggressive recruitment effort. I'll say that's why when I get a chance to plug a bill passing sooner rather than later, because we are in our window now for recruitment, and that'll pass pretty quickly as districts across the country seek people. But I know we have a lot of capacity some capacity in the state with folks that have gotten degrees and expertise in reading, and then we'll have to go outside. And I also note that in terms of the expense of the bill and the expertise we need, as you know, the governor is very sensitive about the budget, and so we got the $21 million grant that we can use in terms of expertise and funding capacity in the department, and we'll certainly be looking at other opportunities like that through the federal government and others to support these positions.
So just one other question before. I mean, it's not really a question, I guess. I understand we're trying to target, so I need to understand the context of that target just a little better. So it doesn't have to happen today. Come talk to me a little bit later on. Then the other thing is we do have schools that are doing it well. It has been stated that's what we intended. And I know that in before kindergarten, many students are not prepared, but many are. Mm-hmm. And I don't want to invest the money and kind of disrespect those who have done well. And so how do we make sure that is properly honored is the kind of the question that I'll be thinking about as we're going through this process, because we have some really well-performing schools that have done their job and done it well. And some of it is economics, I get that. Some of it is not. I've rubbed shoulders with a lot of people who were very poor but could read very well. And so, I mean, it's not all economics. And so I want to make sure that the schools that have done their job and doing it well and are accelerating their capacity are not disrespected in this account. So just for what it's worth.
Thank you. I appreciate those comments, Senator Coghill. So maybe we should have started by talking about how bad things are. Certainly we have districts that have done a great job and schools that have done a great job, but when we compare Alaska to the rest of the nation, we are particularly bad in terms of reading. Is that true, Commissioner, and could you reflect on that? I know we have several questions here, and we'll get to those in a minute, but any comments on we can only go up, it looks to me like.
Chair Stevens, so the National Assessment of Educational Progress is the one assessment that is common across the 50 states. And it's a scientific sampling, and each state takes it. And that's the number you often hear, because that's really the only true comparison we can make to other states. And the fact is, as disappointing as it is, it's a fact that compared to all the other states, Alaska, on the last two NAEPs, has ranked at the very bottom in fourth grade reading proficiency. And that ranking, though, represents a huge achievement gap also, one of the largest in the country. And so we do have kids that are performing really well. But we have to be so dissatisfied and uncomfortable with the fact that regardless of what you think of that assessment, we compare at the very bottom. And we should at least want to do better, because I think we all agree, Alaska students should be at the very top. The lifestyle they lead, the culture we have in this state, there's no reason why we should not be at the very top of this country, and I believe our kids can. And so with this bill and establishing good policy, I think we can get there. But like you said, because we are so low, I think passing a bill and implementing it well, we'll see some exciting improvement, and it won't take that long to see that improvement.
Thank you, Commissioner. That is exciting. So I have a couple of questions from Senator Costello and then Senator Magich.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Commissioner and your staff. I do know that there's been a lot of effort put into addressing the challenges of bringing our students up to a reading proficiency, and many Alaskans have dedicated countless, if not hundreds of thousands of hours just gathering to address the situation. So I didn't want that to go unrecognized because many of them are my constituents and they include a lot of families and teachers and educators. So I wanted to throw that out there that there are a lot of people working on this. In my conversations that I've had about this bill, there's been a concern that we're not identifying or defining what a reading specialist is. And it's my understanding that it's not just anybody who can be identified as a reading specialist, that if we're looking at the research-based, the results-supported training that is getting the results that we want, which is actually, in my understanding, a more modern way to teach reading, that training is not easily come by. And you had mentioned earlier in response to Senator Coghill's question that even if this bill were to pass tomorrow, that we don't know where we would find all of these reading specialists. So I just wanted to put on the public record that I would like to see a definition of reading specialist so that we're not in a situation where we're just hiring more bodies to send to schools, but we're not necessarily getting the best trained, highly qualified reading specialist, and I would rather see one than 10. So my question about the fiscal note and how that relates to that is, what if you're not able to find those individuals, and is there a plan or a discussion in terms of how we go about training more reading specialists and where we find them, and if we don't find them, what happens to the fiscal note? Does that money roll over to the next year, or is it just money that we're not going to spend in that particular fiscal year, since these are broken out each fiscal year?
Through the chair, Senator Costello, I'll take the first part, but I'll let you answer the rollover things. So first of all, thank you for acknowledging all the work that has already been done. And as I said when I introduced the bill, there are so many people that their voice is in the bill, their fingerprints are on the bill, and the same will be true of the implementation. The department can't do it alone, districts can't do it alone, and thankfully, as you noted, there's a lot of people in Alaska that have been focused on this issue for a long time. So thank you for that. In terms of the capacity and finding the right people and defining reading specialists, and Senator Begich may want to comment on this, but I know that as the bill was being crafted, there's a number of places, and that one is one that was specifically mentioned, that will need to be defined in regulation. And by defining it in regulation, you do it through the state board, where there's a lot of opportunity for public input in that process and a long period of public comment. And so reading specialists is just one of those examples of where the regulatory process will make sure to define several elements of the bill in a way that invites stakeholders into that process. Mississippi is an example, Colorado, some others that address the capacity issue by making sure that they had a robust plan for the professional development. So every K-3 teacher received training through the department. They actually contracted with somebody to provide that training. And so we already are having conversations in the department about how we will implement the professional development part, partnering with other agencies. For example, I'll mention too the RTI conference that just happened, but also CERC, the Southeast Regional Resource Center, won the Regional Comprehensive Center grant this last fall. And so we've been meeting with them and partnering with them to make sure that the comprehensive grant that they got, which is all about providing support and capacity to districts through training, is aligned with a vision to get every student reading by third grade.
So if I understand, the reading specialists are not necessarily new hires, outside people. They could be current teachers, current members of our school district. I know that causes other openings, but with professional development, that 10 to 40 reading specialists could come from internally as well. Is that right?
Chair Stevens, that's correct. I think the answer would be both. There'll be some, hopefully, we recruit from that's already in the system, and then some outside. And then if the bill passes, then a conversation will need to continue, begin with the university system to make sure that the university's teacher preparation programs and reading scholarships programs aligns with what the legislature has said they want through this reading bill for reading instruction.
Thank you, Director Heidi. If you have some clarification, then we'll get to Senator Begich in a minute. Heidi.
Yes, through the chair, Senator Costello, you had asked about basically the rollover of funds of what doesn't get spent. So if we can't hire all of the 20 staff members that are reflected, the reading specialist reflected in the student school achievement component, or we don't get 368 students rolling through the first cohort of the early education grant, we will adjust out year requests through the department's budget to true up where we're at with implementation of these programs.
Yes, please, Senator.
Thank you. And so, Commissioner, what I'm hearing you say is that you're actually not interested in defining reading specialist in the legislation, and you're looking to the regulatory process for that, and that's my understanding of your response to my question. Is that correct?
Through the chair, Senator Costello, I wouldn't say that I'm uninterested. Okay. I would just say that the conversation that happened as the bill was developed was that would be in regulation. The legislature can decide where they want that to fall.
Thank you for that. And then I was curious, are there other states that have pursued a similar effort in this regard that actually do have that definition in their statute? And if you don't know that, if we could get that information, that would be helpful for me.
Through the chair, we'll get that to you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Costello. Senator Begich.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. First, a couple of responses, which I think will be helpful to Senators Costello and Senator Coghill. First, it was a discussion over the detail of the legislation that had us take definitions like reading specialist out, but Colorado, I believe, has a reading specialist definition, and some other states do. So we'll make sure that you have that, and I certainly don't oppose putting those definitions in the bill if they were necessary. The properly honoring of schools, Senator Coghill, I'd mentioned that, and one of the actual unique aspects of this bill is if you do have a functioning and working pre-K program, which many of the schools that have those higher performing, many of the districts that have those higher performing schools, in fact, do have, you could roll those kids currently into your ADM. You wouldn't have to go through the grants program, which is a three-year process. And that in and of itself is a reward to those districts because you're acknowledging that they have done the hard work already. And so in a way, that kind of moves them in. But I want to really talk about some of the bigger, broader issues. And before I do, you mentioned the university and its teacher preparation program. So I have to put on the record that I run a scholarship fund that does fund students who go for teacher preparation, many of whom do attend the University of Alaska. So I'm just putting that on the record. Nothing that I'm saying either benefits or in any way would enhance my income. But I wanted to put that on the record. The fund issues come up all the time, and I want to point out some of the stuff we do here. We cannot dedicate funds by the Constitution, but what we often do is designate funds here in Alaska. So, for example, 2 years ago, the legislature, after 2 years of deliberation and all of us were there, passed a bill that included both the raffle, which I guess is 4 o'clock today, is that right? So everyone stay tuned. As well as the secondary piece that changed the percent of market value calculation for how we deposit into the trust fund, the education trust fund. That has actually increased state's income, ostensibly for education, by almost $10 million annually. And we're going to get, I think, a little presentation from Michael from Legislative Affairs on that, and he has the accurate numbers and would also be able to present the numbers that have been raised from the education raffle. Now, we cannot dedicate any of that money to education, but the implication is that there is 10, 11 plus million dollars this year alone in additional resources that come from education. Senator Bishop has also proposed legislation, as you know, for an education head tax. Well, again, we cannot say that the tax will go specifically to education because we're prohibited by the constitutional prohibition. However, it shows intent from the legislature that that kind of resource, should a bill like that pass, could also be devoted to education. We've done that a number of times here in the legislative process since I've been here, and I'm certain prior to the time that I was here, we've done other things like that. So what I'm pointing out there is as we have these discussions of fiscal impact, understand that this legislature, including all of us, have had the chance to support legislation that has actually enhanced our annual education income by almost $11 million, if not more. And again, we'll have a presentation, I think, briefly from Michael on that. And I think that's worth remembering as we go through this process, because otherwise we're just putting that money in the budget to be spent in the general fund, you know, willy-nilly. And I don't think that was our intent when we voted for and supported those pieces of legislation. But that said, I just want to clarify one last thing, Heidi. Let me find my note here. It's just that I've lost my train of thought. Sometimes, you know, I just get going and I forget. So I'll come back to it later if I can.
Thank you. Senator Baggage. Senator Hughes has some comments. Before we do that, I would like to fairly quickly move on to the invited testimony. Senator Hughes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'll just say, I'm going to throw this out. I don't want to stir up controversy, but it's a novel idea I think we need to think about. And I first heard about it in relationship to health care and the cost of health care and the difficulty of having providers up here. And it was Dr. Doug Eby at the Lathanade Medical Center talked about the way we train in our medical schools, that we actually could save a lot if we would train technicians to do, for instance, orthopedic surgery, because it's very repetitive and pretty limited, and you could have a surgeon supervising technicians to do some of this work, and they could learn how to do what they need to do in a year or two's time for some of these particular surgery types. So I'm just throwing out here that because this is a national problem we're having as far as teachers, I would like to know, would there be potential that you could train technicians where they might not have a master's in teaching and you know, everything involved, if they're just going to focus on reading, whether that's potentially is a possibility as a way to make sure that our children are learning. So that's just a novel idea that we could maybe think about. But I did want to understand, and I really appreciate, Senator Baggage, your mention of the education trust and the change and how we calculate that, as well as Senator Bishop's raffle. You mentioned about $10-11 million. We'll be hearing about that. Is that potential? I guess, and I don't know if that's for you all or for Senator Baggage, and is whether that could potentially be $10 million a year, or did it take us a couple years to build that $10 million? And then I have another question, but if we could stop for that one, would it be $10 million a year just from that?
Mr. Chairman, I can answer that.
Senator Baggage.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Michael will reinforce this from legislative finance, but the amount that I understand, and based on the spreadsheet I've had, is the change in the deposits in the trust fund now represent an additional $10 million annually.
Okay, good.
Not one-time money, but annually. We've ramped up to it in the first year. I'm guessing at the numbers. I think he said $19 million to $29 million, but he's going to actually be accurate and probably school me on that. The raffle amounts, according to the governor, in my conversations with him, was about $1 million. But, again, I asked that Michael present on that as well so that we know exactly what the amounts are, and I don't know that amount. But
okay, follow-up. That's really helpful, because when you're talking about something $90 million over 9 years, you're basically $10 million a year. So those match up nicely. Then I had this is my actual question, Mr. Chair, and I know you're trying to get invited testimony. Commissioner, how many of our kindergartners are not prepared? If you had to give a range, a percentage, how many of our kindergartners are not prepared when they enter kindergarten?
I think he's got the answer right there.
Through the chair, thank you to my staff who provided me this card before I came up here. 69%. So we give the kindergarten development profile, and there's, I think, 13 categories on there, and 69% did not meet the 11 threshold. So in other words, it's a significant number based on the developmental profile that we have.
And then follow-up comment to that. I noticed that our goal is at the end of the grant program to have 88%. So if 69% aren't prepared, but we're trying to bring 88%, which is about 8,800 of our 10,000 estimated cohort of kindergartners, I'm just wondering why our goal is 88% instead of 69%.
Through the chair, I'll let Heidi talk about the 88% and what that specifically refers to. Our goal is to have every child reading proficiently by the end of third grade. The 88% refers to – go ahead, Heidi.
Through the chair, Representative Costello, we add – looking at the kids that are already being served, And then looking at what additional kids, we're just striving to make sure every student is reading proficiently. Last session, you know, Senator Begich commented on other states where they're at, you know, 70% participation rate or 77, you know, some may, you know, we're obviously striving high. We can definitely, that's one of the areas we can look at to look at the costs where, you know, we maybe we're not, shouldn't strive for 88 and maybe start closer to maybe 70%. It's a starting point.
And I think I can clarify on that. Follow-up statement,
just as Senator Coghill wanted to have respect for the schools that are doing a good job, I have respect for parents that are doing a good job. And, you know, if we go too high, we're maybe putting some children into the program that could be as well served and perhaps even better served by being home. I'm a little old-fashioned, and I had my children, you know, at home before they went to kindergarten, and they learned how to I actually taught them to read before, pretty much before they went to kindergarten. But I just don't – I want to respect the parents. And if we're trying to push to get every child in a public school by age four, I really – I'm a little resistant to that. I want to respect parents and families that are doing a good job.
Mr. Chairman, response?
Yes, I want to respond to that just to say that the key to this bill is based on the Oklahoma bill from 20-some years ago to that portion of it. What that number actually represents is the number of kids that would be potentially enrolled in pre-kindergarten at that point, but that choice is left to the parents. It's a voluntary, not a mandatory pre-K program. It absolutely respects a parent who would choose not to do that, and it's quite clear in its definition. So I heard that loud and clear first year back in 2017 and made sure that it was a voluntary component, very much like Oklahoma's. Some states that have these laws have a significantly lower number that actually take advantage of them. Oklahoma happens to be in between the 80th and 90th percentile, so we use them as the example of what we thought was a fair target if all districts were exposed. So that 88% isn't about whether they aren't or are or aren't achieving. It's about how many kids potentially would enroll, how many parents would enroll their kids into pre-K. But again, left to the parents to do it. And there are other strong parental elements in the bill to strengthen the parents' voice in everything from whether a child progresses to whether a child is engaged in pre-K. We want the parents' voice to be heard, and that was something the governor and I agreed on.
So I really appreciate your comments, Senator Hughes. And going back to the first comment you made about, is there something about those folks who are working, I think, with pre-K, is there a requirement that they all be certificated teachers? You were asking, is there something like an aid program that there could be teaching aids? Could you help us understand the 10 to 40 reading specialists, can they be anything less than a full certificated teacher?
Through the chair, Senator Hughes, for the reading specialist position, I don't have the – I would need to look up exactly what the wording is in the bill, but I would say – that may be something that could be defined in the regulation or the bill is that it – I think the intent is that it's somebody that's certified with a degree that represents skill in reading. In terms of support folks or technicians, you know, I'll give a shout-out to all the education support professionals now that work in schools, some of which have been highly trained. I know my former principal, who happens to be in the room, spent a lot of money in our district to train education support professionals to work with interventions and those sorts of things with districts. And then to the former question, I would just note that when we talk about, you know, students being prepared for kindergarten and the participation in a pre-K program, those are two separate things. So we certainly, I 100% agree with the senator that families shouldn't be required to send, and in fact, even now, the compulsory age law starts in first grade, not kindergarten. So families should have the choice with pre-K. But when we talk about participation, we, for budget purposes, we estimate how many students will participate. That's different than how many students are actually prepared for kindergarten.
Thank you, Commissioner. Well, I think we've got probably more questions to go, but if we can move on to our invited testimony, and we'll have plenty of time to delve into all the details of this bill. Thank you very much, Commissioner and Ms. Teschner. Michael Partlow is with us. Michael is legislative finance, and appreciate hearing from him on some couple of issues, the education raffle and confirming pre-K monies for the Moore case. Mr. Partlow, put yourself on the record, please.
For the record, Michael Partlow with Legislative Finance. I apologize. I am not prepared to speak in detail regarding the public school trust fund amounts, but I can speak in more general terms about the trends involving that fund. As Senator Begich mentioned, recent changes to the way that that fund is managed has, I guess, freed up would be an appropriate term, more money for appropriation each year out of the public school trust fund. Previously, the bill was set up essentially in sort of a 1970s model where there was a separate fund where earnings from the fund were placed and you could only appropriate actual earnings from the fund. So it limited the type of investments that the fund could be in because they had to have a certain amount of cash available in a certain time period. So that meant investing in bonds and things like that, so that there was a certain amount of cash that was available each year. That averaged around $16 million over the last several years for appropriation, and it was appropriated to the foundation formula payments and essentially supplanted the UGF portion of that. So public school trust fund was available to be spent as part of the foundation, and the amount of available funds offset the amount of UGF that was obligated to that. More recently, that fund was used starting in 2018 to help fund Mount Edgecombe's operations. So that lowered the amount of public school trust fund that was available for foundation, but lowered the UGF obligation for Mount Edgecombe. The fund now under the new structure, which is a POMV model, which you're probably all familiar with through the permanent fund, allows different types of investments, which increases the earning potential and made the available amount of money for sustainable appropriation out of the fund go from around $16 million average up to 26. And this year, the governor includes a $29 million appropriation out of that fund. So that is additional funds that are available and are currently, under the structure that we do it, used to pay for foundation. And the governor is proposing a fund source change for Mount Edgecombe. So Mount Edgecombe would now be funded with UGF, and for all of public school trust fund to be appropriated in the language section towards foundation funding. So that's $29 million towards foundation funding. Senator Begich also referred to education raffle funding, which is a newer funding source. Unlike public school trust fund, which is used to supplant UGF, so to replace UGF in the budget, education raffle funding currently is budgeted about $488,000 this year and is considered additional funding outside of the formula. So that's money on top of what would otherwise be appropriated for education in the state. Does anyone have any other specific questions?
Thank you, Mr. Partlow. Any other questions? Just Senator Begich.
Just an observation that after I'm hopeful that after the experience this year with the raffle announcement, that the state will take a message, you know, here with all of us and try to do the raffle announcement before the permanent fund filing begins, so that if people actually decide they want to invest in the raffle, which is $100 a shot, that they, and I bought two, so I'm hopeful that I'm going to win tonight, Mr. Chairman, but that they actually have an opportunity to do it before they file their dividend checks. So, but that raffle's today, and somebody's going to win $17,000, and I think there are three other prizes. So.
Thank you, Senator. Further questions? Further comments, Mr. Partlow? Thank you very much. Just a note that we have Karen Mellon and Tamara Van Wy online for any questions. Karen is the deed deputy commissioner. Tamara Van Wy is the deed director of teacher excellence. Any further questions? And let's move on to a couple of other opportunities in public testimony. So we'll open up briefly to public testimony in the time we have left. And if there's anybody in the room who would like to testify, it's great to hear from them. Particularly, I'm looking at Judy Elledge, Posey Boggs, Lisa Faraday, Norm Wooten. Any of those folks care to come forward and comment? I see Judy Elledge moving, so we'll invite you up to make any comments.
I would like to just tell everybody how excited I am.
For the record, if you
Judy Elledge, and I've been in education since 1981 in the state of Alaska, and since 1997 I've been in rural Alaska, retired in 2003, and have worked off and on as a state coach and consulting with lowest performing school districts in the state, so I'm very aware of what we need and what we do not need, and I've not always been a proponent of preschool, but I will tell you that when students come into school and they don't have the oral language in order to do the curriculum of the kindergarten, it's extremely difficult. And so if it is done correctly, I do support it. And I'm just real excited about it. I know it's going to be a big issue for some for the cost. And I also have worked at coaches. One of the things that I would like to mention is the fact that many of us retired people work on contract as coaches. We have a lot of knowledge. So maybe that would be something looked at. A lot of retired teachers do keep coming out of retirement. They have a lot of experience, and they would love to do something like that. So that's just a mention, and it's not quite as expensive as a full-time employee. So, Judy,
you're saying that the retired teachers could serve as some of these reading specialists.
Right. Right now, in the coaching program that works with the low-performing schools, that is all mostly retired teachers that work as coaches, yes, for the department. We work under the department.
Yeah, thank you. And Senator Costello.
Thank you, and welcome, Judy, to Juno. I appreciate all of your efforts. could you let me know what is a low-performing school? How is a school defined as low-performing?
There is data that comes out of the Department of Education on their test scores, and they're identified. There's a lot of criteria, and there is that list is generated by the Department of Education and the federal government. A lot of the money that comes into the state is from the federal government, and they actually have the identifiers of what a low-performing school would be. And so they have those strings of where that money needs to go.
Yes, please, go ahead.
How, as policymakers, are we to know whether or not this bill, if enacted, was working? So what does it look like if this is effective?
And I will refer to the commissioner on that because that's always been one of my issues, is that we've given a lot of money to a lot of these districts. And I think that everybody is responsible here, not just educators. We get blamed for a lot. You have parents, you have districts. How is that money being spent, and who's going to be accountable? And anyone that knows me knows that's a question I ask all the time. And I do believe, I haven't had a deep discussion, but I do believe there's some criteria in that over a three-year period, but I will refer that to either Senator Begich or Mr. Johnson. It's something I will look at. But I do think that criteria needs to be in there, because I think they should have to do something with it, because I have seen a lot of money spent and no accountability.
Senator Begich.
I think we both can answer that question. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and I think Commissioner also. But I first wanted to thank you, Judy, both in terms of our conversations, which have helped enhance the bill, but also in terms of your support and accountability questions, because Senator Hughes had those same questions the other day in the hearing. And the bill actually has a defined research component that will allow us to actually track whether the districts are doing these processes and whether we're meeting our targets and benchmarks. Further, there's a reporting requirement in the bill. And I know that districts sometimes bridle at the reporting issues, but I think we need that to know how the work that's happening through the bill is being implemented. We wanted to know that, and we insisted that that research component be a part of it. The governor, myself, and the commissioner felt that that was a critical component to the bill, because otherwise, how do we know we're doing what we said we're going to do? How do we know we're actually meeting our obligation to the kids and the parents who are expecting us to help improve this learning environment? And how do we know that the policymakers who've invested the resources are getting a return for that investment? And that's why we had the research components written in, and that's why we also have the accountability components literally written into the bill itself. I think, Commissioner, if you had anything to add to that, I don't know.
For the record, Michael Johnson, through the chair, Senator Costello. So we do have an accountability system, and I think if the committee is interested, we can come and give a presentation on the accountability system we have and what elements go into that accountability system. As Senator Begich said, the bill has a number of intersections where there's accountability built into it, not only the schools and districts reporting on the internet issues with their outcomes, but the reading specialist that would be hired, and I checked in the bill, and it does say that those are certified, and that the definition will be, the bill actually says the definition will be defined in regulation. But those have to report back to the department on for accountability purposes on the work that they're doing in the school districts. And all that will be something that's made transparent because it will be posted both on the department's and the district's website.
And through the chair, Senator Casella, one of the things I think is exciting is the fact that I think we are building a very strong system of support. And when we looked at the other states, I think many of us realize that we've had a system of support. It has not been as comprehensive as the other states. And this bill requires us to do that, that we're here. The state level has responsibility, the district and the schools. And I don't think we've ever had, in my opinion, of all the years, there's not been the capacity there to do it. And I know this man to my left very well, and I know he's very committed that we are going to have that system of support. And I have never seen such excitement from, I was just at the conference for 2 days, from people that had received some of the federal grants, and they were begging for help. They were really excited about it, and that's a change of attitude. And so I think that is what the commissioner has recommended in this bill, is the fact that we have a strong system of support to help deliver that. It's not always been there.
Thank you. Senator Hughes, before you go.
Yes, and I just want to thank Judy as well, because she's been a miracle worker and made difference in the futures of some of the children in our state. And I'm pleased that you're going to be part of this process. I do want to say before I ask my question that my question about certified, not certified technician aides, I'm not suggesting that we go there first, but if it becomes a national problem and we're having difficulty finding certified teachers, that we just keep that as an option, because I'm guessing this woman right here could probably train someone to maybe do some of the basics that would really help a child. So I just want to make that clear. I wanted to ask, as far as and I'm thinking the commissioner may have to come back up here for this one, but the accountability, we're asking for reporting, but is it tied to funding? So let's say a district didn't do what they were supposed to do. Is there a funding that's going to be an incentive? Will they not get it if they don't do it? And then the other thing I want to know, Judy mentioned that as state coaches now, retired teachers are doing that, and are they doing that on a contract basis? And is that a potential for some of these positions that it could be contract, that it would be a bit of a savings? And I don't know how it works with, if you can still collect retirement or how that works, but would it be possible to put, instead of full-time employees that were accruing additional costs to our PERS-TERS system, could we potentially use contracted retired teachers? And then is accountability tied to the funding for the school districts?
Through the chair, Senator Hughes, so there are some financial ramifications for the quality. So like the pre-K component, the districts have to demonstrate that they have a quality pre-K program, or they don't get to fund those students through the BSA. And so there is that quality element there. In terms of the foundation formula, there is no mechanism in state law that we would withhold any funding from a district for performance. Under No Child Left Behind, there were some financial implications if you were a low-performing school for an extended period of time. Most of those kind of things changed with the ESSA law so that there's not financial penalty. So the financial implications are you have to demonstrate quality and success to access some of the money for pre-K. And the school improvement piece, you have to you would be signing an MOU basically with the department for certain outcomes, for certain agreements, in order to be able to access that money too. And I think there was a second part, and I forgot what it was.
The state coaches.
The coaches. Heidi May would have to answer how a fiscal note represents, whether it's a contract or a PCN or something like that. I would just say I completely agree with the fact that we have a number of retired folks in the state that are able to add expertise and experience And then the legislature also passed a retire rehire bill that may also be applicable for a situation like this, and folks that have retired and but want to enter back into the system for an opportunity like this to be able to use that bill that was passed.
Okay. Thank you, Commissioner. Thank you, Senator. Any further comments at this point? The before you go, looking at the chart on official number two, it's on the three-year early education grant cycle district eligibility, and it indicates that in 2021, it'd be the lowest 10%. Is that the right number? I mean, it seems like we're, I mean, obviously at 20%, but is there, I suppose that's a cost factor. Can you comment on that, Commissioner?
Thank you, Heidi.
And so it's on fiscal number two. It's table number two.
So, Chair Stevens, are you, just to clarify the question, are you asking why we phase it in at 10% and then 15 and then 15?
Yes, because it's the lowest 10% and then the second lowest 15%, then the third lowest 15%. Maybe you could help us understand that chart. Then it goes to the highest 20%. I'm getting at how are we getting districts involved in this, and is this the right number?
Chair Stevens, so it's too bad Senator Begich left. So this was taken from his Senate Bill 6 last year and the phased-in approach. So there's a couple of things. Part of that's related to the capacity conversation we've been having. So if you say that we're going to add a lot of, like, let's say the first year you said 20 or 25%, that's going to be very difficult to hire the people and to vet the programs and do all of that in 1 year. And so I think the wisdom of the bill is that it recognizes the recruitment issues, the retention issues, the training issues that need to happen. And so it phases in the program over a number of years to ensure quality, to make sure that we aren't just, as Senator Costello mentioned, sending people out to teach reading that we haven't vetted and establish what do we mean by reading specialists, what do we mean by a quality pre-K program, what do we mean by school intervention.
Well, thank you, Commissioner. So you're saying that's a reasonable pace to go at to make sure we achieve the success we want?
Chair Stevens, I think it's reasonable, and you could even say it's ambitious given some of the challenges that we have.
Mm-hmm. Right. Okay, thank you. Further questions? So this is not the only public testimony we'll have. We'll have in the future have another opportunity for folks to testify, and also online testimony. That was not an option here today. But is there anyone else in the few minutes we have left that would care to come forward and speak to this bill? If not, any comments from the committee? Thoughts anybody has? I think we covered a lot of territory there. Okay.
Thank you.
Senator Costello.
So the bill is pretty comprehensive, and I appreciate the time that we've spent on it so far. And maybe at some point in the future, we could dedicate a little bit of time. As you read this bill, the words reading and literacy are used throughout and almost interchangeably. And I've actually never heard a parent come to me and say, my child is having trouble with literacy. I have been aware of parents saying, my child is having trouble reading. And so if those terms could be defined at some point, so that the committee knows, you know, what we mean when we use the word reading and what is meant by the term literacy. That would be helpful for me. Thank you.
Thank you. Good point. We'll make sure we get that answer then. If nothing further to come before us, I'll set Senate Bill 6 aside for further review, and we are adjourned at, what time do we have? 10:23.